हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवत्सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। सो भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 2 अधिकरण 2 भक्ति इज ट्रांसेंडेंटल टू द थ्री मोड्स निर्गुण अनुच्छेद 138। शुद्धम इन द फॉलोइंग वर्स मीन्स निर्गुण धर्मं भागवतं शुद्धं त्रैवेद्यं च गुणाश्रयम्। Ajamil heard about the pure Nirguna Dharma approved by the Lord from the servants of Vishnu, and the pure Dharma recommended in the three Vedas from the servants of Yama. Oh, and the impure, yeah. So here, pure means Nirguna beyond the modes, and impure means within the modes. So we see is that there's, you know, what will be considered Dharma on one level will be Adharma on another. So the higher levels, then you always have to take. If you want to raise the consciousness, then you have to move up to the definitions, right, of that level. And so then pure bhakti then means that what is in connection with Krishna without karma or jnana, that will be considered religious. And what's not, you know, what's not, even though in the material world it may be pious, it's from the three Vedas. It's religious and it will elevate you to heavenly planets or to a position of Lord Brahma. It's considered irreligious on the transcendental platform. So here then, the pure nirguna means, you know, without the modes, transcendental, and impure means within the modes. Right? Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita 2:45, Lord Krishna told Arjuna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nishtrigunyo Bhavarjuna, Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattvasto, Nir Yoga Chema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna, be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety. And be established in the self. Right? Because when you're established in the self, then one that sits it in goodness, so then you don't have the passion ignorance like you saw before. As Arjuna is speaking in the beginning, then he's on the bodily platform about family and all those different things and the relations with Duryodhana and his brothers. And then passion, you know, that he wants to be able to enjoy in that company, and that would be the benefit of, you know, either fighting or not fighting. And then so, you know, the here point is just established in the self. Then you have the aspect of that's going to bring you to goodness because you're going to understand yourself as the soul. But then here is to in the self, meaning the supreme self, because it's capital here, the supreme self. And being established in the supreme self and understanding oneself to be the assistant self, then that puts you beyond the modes, right? The Vedic principles certainly describe a gradual process for rising to the spiritual platform. But if one remains attached to the Vedic principles, there's no chance of his being elevated to spiritual life. Krishna therefore advised Arjuna to perform devotional service, which is the process of transcendental religion. The transcendental position of devotional service is also confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksajay. Bhakti, devotional service, is paro dharmaha, transcendental dharma. It is not material dharma. People generally think that religion should be pursued for material profit. This may be suitable for persons interested in material life. But one who is interested in spiritual life should be attached to paro dharma. the religious principles by which one becomes a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Yato bhaktir adhoksa jay. The Bhagavata religion teaches that the Lord and the living entity are eternally related, and that the duty of the living entity is to surrender to the Lord. When one is situated on the platform of devotional service, one is freed from impediments and completely satisfied. Having been elevated to that platform, Ajamila began to lament for his past materialistic activities and glorify the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2.24 purport. Yeah, so then hearing the difference between, then he starts to see that difference, because we remember before he was functioning as a very proper, you know, Brahmin and all that, and from what I understand, even as a devotee, but he got distracted. Right? The Dharma recommended in the three Vedas takes shelter of the gunas. The commentary says, quote, the word Veda means karmakanda, as in evam trayi dharmam, Bhagavad Gita 9.21. Right? Sukadev spoke thus. Right? So when he says they're in the gunas, and it mentions about the three Vedas, so that means Rig, Yajur, and Sama. And so those are the ones that be recommended for you doing all the major sacrifices and everything like that. So that will be situating oneself in the goodness, right? Means the kamyaka, then, and certain things like that, especially if they're dealing with, you know, not so elevated elements. That's in the Atharva Veda, you know, because that'll be the miscellaneous that was left, right? So originally Atharva meant it was the whole Veda itself. So it's one Veda and everything is all together mixed. One is so big. So then for someone to study the whole thing would be very difficult in the Kali Yuga. Well, previously they just studied the whole Veda, right? It wasn't about this one and that. It was about the whole thing. And he divided it so that it becomes more clear. You know, all the riks, you know, all the hymns are in one samhita. All the prose is in another samhita. All the songs, so the samans are in the third samhita. And so then most all different, you know, your daily performances or any bigger ones, they'll be using these three Vedas. And only, and some that are very big, then they'll have the fourth also, like a Soma Yajna, have the fourth also represented. So, but we see is that these three are the main, like Krishna says in the Gita, of the four Vedas, these the three, right? And then, after saying that, then he says, of the three, then he's the one, the Sama. Right? Because that's in glorification of you know, that's the whole thing is about songs and glorification. So then Sad Dharma means those elements that are everything's being done to please the Lord. So it's not that necessarily your activity changes. It's not that they don't do that yajna, the Brahmins don't do that yajna that's recommended. They just don't do any kamyaka yajnas, anything just for their own benefit. They're just doing what's recommended that they as Brahmins should be doing on a daily basis or, you know, on the nitya or nainitic basis. And so they're doing that because that's the rules given by Krishna. They're doing that. One is this nice karma, of course, that they're not interested in the results. They're just trying to please Krishna. So that itself, the nice karma situated in goodness, will give them liberation. But we see is that they're doing it to please Krishna, so it's transcendental. So now Ajamil then sees that, you know, he's made a mistake for the last, you know, probably, I would say probably 60 years or so. You know, that he just got so materialistic and all that. So, Vriti, after establishing that actions and the underlying faith become nirguna when connected to the Lord, the author proceeds to establish the self-revealing nature of bhakti. This is done to reinforce that the practice of bhakti is not bound by the gunas. Right? So, here is that, you know, the actions themselves that are going to be, you know, either, you know, under the modes or beyond the modes, but it's also the faith that actually is what takes it beyond the modes. Because the work itself may be still controlled because we're not making the work happen. You know, it's like if I take this and I drop it, I'm not making it fall. I can take part as an instrument by letting go of it, but I don't actually make it go down. That's the modes of nature will arrange that, right? You know, I say Sankarsana, then as the principle of gravity and all that, then he'll make it happen through his energies. So the point is that it still works under those, you know, because it's Triguna Mayi. So everything's still going to be mechanically working under those modes, but we don't have to be controlled by them. So if we're doing, you know, as we saw, the same action could be done, you know, in goodness or passion if it's a prescribed duty, or the same duty not recommended, you know, like cooking for yourself, because this Veda Manu mentions that one always, humans always take the remnants of the sacrifice and remnants of the advanced personalities, right? So that's what's recommended, just to cook for yourself. Now to cook what you offered in that sacrifice, you know, that was done with a particular technique, you know, a particular recipe, particular ingredients. And that same thing is then offered now as the remnants of sacrifice to whatever it is, the Brahmins and Vaishnavas that have come for the sacrifice, right? Now you could cook that same recipe yourself, you know, for yourself. So that would be mode of ignorance. Cooking it because you're supposed to, but you want the benefit, that's passion. Doing it because you're supposed to without desire for the results is just this duty, that's goodness. So we see this is just that consciousness. Now, as soon as the faith goes beyond that to serving the Lord, then that takes it into another realm, because the work itself is going to function still under those modes. These are subtleties that may make it difficult to understand, because we think, oh, here it says you should give that up, so we don't do that activity. No, this means you give up the mentality, because you see at the beginning, Arjuna is going to fight, then he gives up the fighting for seemingly higher social, you know, and religious principles, and Krishna tells him, no, you're going to fight, but at transcendental. So then Arjuna's confusion is, okay, you pointed out the science of the soul, you said that what I was saying was an illusory, and now you're pointing out business of the soul, and on that platform, now you're telling me fight again. So then he's thinking, I don't understand. So he has to then explain karma yoga, how karma is connected to the Lord, then how jnana is connected to the Lord, how yoga is connected to the Lord. And then, you know, bring that up to the point of then there's devotional service, and then bring that to the point of pure devotional service, you know, and then point out so that you can see the difference between, you know, the activities that are going on and what modes are controlling and how to not be controlled by those modes, because one's doing everything for the Lord. And so then bringing it to that point, then he says, you know, to not worry about all these other religious elements for the particular either detachment or benefits that you get from it. But you should or your independence, you should be doing it because of wanting to please the Lord, right? That's the whole point of being doing it. So then he's fighting again. So you can see as he's going to fight, he gives that up. And at the end, after hearing all this transcendental knowledge, he's fighting again. So if the point was is when, you know, either here it's not recommending the three Vedas, or where it doesn't recommend Varnashram, you know, in the context of it being under the modes, that doesn't mean the activities themselves aren't done. They're just only done according to recommendation to please Krishna. That's why for us, then we have Daiva Varnashram. We're not following Varnashram, we're following Daiva Varnashram. But, you know, once that's understood, you say Varnashram, you know. So there may be a specific aspect, but, you know, once you know the specific aspect, then you can refer to it as a general thing, you know. You know, you say, yeah, I'm going back to the house. But which house? It's the family house. Or it's to the, you know, the ashram. You know, or, you know, like that. So that's what's understood. So you don't have to say everything. I'm going back to, you know, our house, which is on, you know, 723, you know, West 97th Street on in this area. You know, I don't have to say, I just have to say the house. You know, so the same way is having established that we are acting like recommended in the Gita by Arjuna, that you're not engaging in Varnashram, engaging in Daiva Varnashram, and a service to the Lord. That's how the Ekshesa gets it. So when Prabhupada and the Shastra then recommend Varnashram in the context of service to Krishna, then we know that it's Daiva Varnashram. We don't, it's not something else. So therefore, all these things, oh, but we've given that up. It's been rejected. Under the modes, yes. Transcendental, no. Like that. So that's the whole point here, is that one has to go beyond. So bhakti is beyond, because it can be performed and you're still performing these activities that sing, that are under the modes, but you're not under the modes. That's bhakti. That's the power of bhakti, is that bhakti is being performed, that even though it's in the material world, even though you're following the recommendations of the Vedas, even though you're engaging the body and senses, and all that's under the modes, that you're not under the modes. That's the power of bhakti. So that's how we have to look at. We tend to look at the secondary, and so we say do this or not that. It's about the secondary, when actually what's being described is about the primary. Secondary is going to be, if I'm describing bhakti and how to perform bhakti to a room full of people, it has to be in such a way that everyone can apply it. Everyone has a different nature. Therefore, they're going to be applying different features and aspects and details, you know, of action and knowledge, you know, according to their own position. So if I just only get into certain detail and that's all, then it's only going to fit those individuals that it may specifically apply to, and all others feel that it doesn't engage them, or doesn't answer their questions, or address their position, like that. So bhakti, then, having described the mechanics of how things work and how the consciousness then is above that, then it's already done, because you're dealing with multiple layers of things. You're dealing with the situation. You're dealing, and everything involved in that, and you're involved in that. You're part of the situation. You're standing there, you're part of the situation. This idea, objective means you're not part of the situation, but the point is you are. Now, the scientists, we're looking at things objectively, but you're right there. You're part of the situation there. You're part of the circumstances. No, we're objective, but you're part. You know, so that's the thing, is that we are part. Then when you get into that, accordingly, then what is your qualities? What is your qualification? What is your knowledge? You can take part and engage that, those circumstances. And why are you engaging those circumstances? Because engaging them will get a result. Why are you getting a result? What it's for? It's for pleasing Krishna. It's for freeing yourself from material contamination. It's for piety, you know, to elevate yourself to higher material positions, or it's just selfish for yourself directly. You know, these are all there. So you can have these four levels of consciousness, either above the modes or three levels within the modes. And so that's not about, oh, the circumstance was such, I had to do that. No, the circumstance always has the option for those four. Every circumstance, say what you like. You know, Prahlad Maharaj is being thrown into a pit of snakes. He chooses Nirguna, absorption in the Lord. Right? That's it. You know, you can say, oh, but the situation says, how can you remember? Why, what's your alternative? What are you going to remember? You know, you're being thrown in a pit of snakes. There's no one else around. None of your friends or anybody's there. What are you going to do? Remember your teddy bear, and he's going to save you, or what? No, you remember Krishna. There isn't something else. So the point is there isn't, since everything is expanding from Krishna, there's nothing anywhere that doesn't give rise to the ability to act in the way of Nirguna. It's just that one should understand it, and therefore then through sadhana, then one practices that practice. That's what manan is for. I have a knowledge, I practice it, I apply it, And in practicing, I see I'm getting some results here, but this area I'm not, or I'm not, you know, the consciousness is not. And so then I have to contemplate what to do, how to improve. That's called manana. Then having understood more, oh, okay, because of this, then I go and I apply it again. When the opportunity is there, I contemplate again. Was it better? Yes, it's a little better, but still this part here. And you keep doing that until, you know, you see its value and everything, and it's able to run and you're able to do nicely. Then that's what turns into nididhyasana. Right? The realization. Yeah. Anucheda 139. Bhakti is self-revealing. Swayam prakasha. Awakening the Surup Shakti of the Lord. Right? So bhakti awakens that, right? So from Bhagavatam. I offer respects to the personification of sacrifice, the master of Dharma, who is skillful in the rules for sacrifice, to the personification of yoga, to the head of Shankya, to the Lord of Prakriti, to Narayana, to Hari. Wanting to give up his dear body, he chanted loudly this prayer, Srimad Bhagavatam 5:14-45. Yeah, it's interesting how in English it's just designed that you can't be respectful. You know, Lord of Prakriti, okay, at that point, you know, or Shankya, because it's supposedly a proper noun, so then it gets the thing. But the head of it, I mean, you're talking about Krishna. I have to respect the personification of sacrifice. Krishna is the personification of sacrifice. He's the master of Dharma. He is skillful in the rules of sacrifice. He is the personification of yoga. He is the head of it. Yeah. So that's Srimad Bhagavatam 5:14-45. Bhakti appeared on its own, since it was impossible for Bharata, son of Rishabha, to express himself in words at the time of death in the body of a deer. It took the form of glorifying the Lord. The same can be seen in Gajendra. Sukadev spoke thus. So he's pointing out is that, how is it that the deer is expressing himself in words at the time of death, right? Because the deer doesn't talk. You know, he didn't say that he was Kimpurusha or Kinara, where they're half animals, half humans, you know, so, and they can talk, like, you know, they can talk Sanskrit, they talk, it means what's in the Bhagavatam isn't a translation, that's what they spoke, right, you know, in the prayers. So how is a deer, but that's bhakti is manifesting, and then he has that mood and all that, and then it manifests these prayers. So that's the power of bhakti. Bhakti is therefore very special. It's swayam prakash, it's self-manifesting. And so it awakens the Sarup Shakti. Lord, therefore, then he's able to offer these prayers. Vriti, in the next Anucheda, it is affirmed that the joy experienced through bhakti, whether in the stage of practice or in the perfected stage, transcends the influence of the three gunas, right? So this is a very important point. Anucheda 140, bhakti is the highest form of happiness. Quote, thus with great joy, the wise constantly perform bhakti, which gives joy to the mind, to Lord Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:22. Udriti, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, by saying, quote, with great joy, end quote, it is indicated that even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, there are no difficulties, Sardartha Darshani. 1:2:22. Right? So that's important. So that means when people come in contact with the devotees and they take prasad and they're really happy with that. Right? Or the kirtan, and they're very absorbed and very happy. It creates a very nice impression. These are transcendental to the modes. It's not that, oh, but he's just a karmi, you know, that just walked in the door, so he can't be functioning on the transit. No, that's the point of bhakti. It's independent nature is whatever comes from. Therefore, the knowledge that came from it, you know, that was able to give the prayers for Bharat Maharaj as a deer. Or we see here is that the materialist who walk in off the street, you know, like that by Krishna's arrangement due to the Ajata Sukriti and his wanting to know something more, why things are going on, so he comes in contact. And so the experience they get, that is transcendental. That's the power of bhakti, right? That's the point. We offer prasad, we give it to the ducks. We're going to say is that it gives a transcendental result. And so the ducks enjoying the prasad, you know, that happiness is transcendental. And the effect it'll give is transcendental. So that's bhakti. That it's unique. Because why I have to bring out the point is, okay, the knowledge has to be because of the aspect of chit, right? So sat, we've described how its position in relationship to the action and inaction and all these different things with the Vedas, you know, and all that knowledge, that aspect has been established. That establishes the sat aspect, right? So the actual sat is beyond the modes. So even liberation isn't beyond the modes. So it doesn't actually fully address thought. Now in chit, so then that means then bhakti also then reveals itself, you know, self-revealing the internal potency of the Lord. And so then one is able to act and think and everything in that context. And now it's bringing out the point of form of the highest happiness, right? So sat-chit and ananda. So sat-chit and ananda are all colluded in bhakti. Because otherwise the material world, we're used to dealing with the facilities of sat and chit, but on the platform, the modes. So we're not dealing on the eternal platform because we don't know the soul. So we're dealing with existence of things, knowledge of things, you know, how you say, qualifications of individuals like that. And so then it's more. So you see is that that's the point, is that seeing the situation, seeing the qualifications of the individuals involved, and then who's supposed to do what, that then is knowledge, right? It may be under the, you know, modes of goodness or passion or ignorance, depending upon how you're applying it. But at least then you can say is that there is some aspect of knowledge there. But when you're not working with that, you're just working on the platform of, you know, what somebody feels or, you know, anything like that. So it has nothing to do with who's qualified to do what, and everything's going to work out perfect just because of people's, you know, feelings. And it's not even like higher feelings. We're just talking about they want. And so that's going to be based on ignorance. It's just selfishness about themselves. And it's not about the nature of the thing. It's I want. So even if you do the action correctly, your whole motive in doing it and everything was based on your feeling, not on what is the qualification or the action. So it will be governed by ignorance. So it can't elevate. So in this case, passion, for those who you have to be qualified to do an action to get the proper result, are in a higher level of consciousness. They'll say, no, they just feel like they should be able to do whatever they feel and all that. Even though it may be the same action, one's in ignorance and one's in passion. That's why one will be better than the other. And obviously see the ignorance is a problem. But then there's no satisfaction with the passion either. Then you'll have those talking about, no, but you have to be detached and, you know, the higher things are not at that. So that's going to be higher again, but still it won't satisfy the soul because Satchitananda actually have to be beyond the modes. You know, our application of it, right? Because Satchitananda is beyond the modes. So therefore, unless we understand it and apply it beyond the modes, it won't work for us so well. So then another quote, Karman Yasmin, not Asmin, Nana Svase, Duma, Dumrat, Manam Bhavan. Apayayati Govindam Pada Padma Savam Madhu. You let us, blackened by the smoke at this uncertain sacrifice, drink the intoxicating nectar of the lotus feet of Govinda. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.12. Having shown the happiness in the state of sadhana, the happiness in perfection is shown. Mat sevaya pratitam te salokyadi chatushtayam. Nechanti sevaya purna kuto nyat kala viplutam. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Swarupya, Samipya, and Sharshti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of any perishable happiness? Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.67. Udriti Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bilva Mangal Thakur has estimated the value of liberation as follows. Mukti swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman. Dharamartha kama gataya samaya pratikshaha. Bilva Mangal Thakur realized that if one develops his natural devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mukti stands before him with folded hands to offer all kinds of service. In other words, the devotee is already liberated. There is no need for him to aspire for different types of liberation. The pure devotee automatically achieves liberation even without desiring it. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.67 purport. Right, so liberation is there. That's why Krishna is saying, although he's not interested, although these are automatically achieved in his service, right? And the thing here is these are beyond, right? So then these are the Vaishnava. They're beyond the modes. They're in the transcendental world, right? The people on this platform are on the platform of prema. But, you know, they have that, within that, they have that idea of things that, you know, will please them. But it's in connection with the Lord, so it's pure. It's beyond the modes. And, while we're discussing about the point is that if you just serve the Lord and please him, then automatically everything else will work out. So that's pure, unalloyed devotional service. And then, you know, and Krishna's pointing out what to speak. What then is to be said of any perishable happiness? Right? So then that is like, that's under the modes. They don't even care about that. So we can see as those on the platform of practice are already, tasting a higher taste because of the practice of devotional service, let alone those who are already on that platform. Right? Other types of happiness are impermanent, kala viplutam. That means they're under time. By time they come, they go. Since bhakti is permanent, it is nirguna, but it is greater than saloki, etc., which is also permanent. Right? So he's pointing out that the happiness of bhakti is greater than these. So even those in Vaikuntha, they have those. Maybe they wanted those. They perform their service to gain those, but the happiness they're getting is beyond that position. Right? So that's the point. So pure and alloyed, then you don't even worry about those in the process of practice. Also, you understand what you're getting to before. So then you go for a higher, that the point of pure and alloyed devotion. Vishnu spoke thus to Durvasa. Okay, so this is that Ambarish pastime. Riti, how are we doing on time? Okay. The Adhikarana asserted that bhakti operates beyond the control of the three modes, emphasizing its independent and superior position, describing actions influenced by the three gunas. It distinguished direct devotion to the Lord as superior to Nishkam Karma Yoga in the mode of Sattva Guna. Additionally, it clarified that Sattva Guna was not the cause of bhakti, and established that the mercy of the Supreme Lord and his devotees was the exclusive cause of bhakti. The Adhikarana then explained that both actions and faith underlying them become transcendental to the modes when related to the Lord. In further establishing the self-revealing nature of bhakti, emphasizing its freedom from the influence of the gunas, lastly, it affirms that the joy experienced through bhakti transcends the impact of the three gunas. Right? So in other words, bhakti is not dependent on the gunas at all. This idea sometimes that comes up, oh, we'll just establish people in goodness and that way then, you know, they'll get bhakti. Or if we do all these nice activities, then that situation of gunas, that'll enhance our bhakti. But it's pointing out here is bhakti is completely independent of that. It has nothing to do with that. Point is why is it recommended for the mode of goodness? Because generally people in the mode of goodness are more open to the idea of pure devotion. Right? They're more open to the idea of actual bhakti. So when they come in contact with it, seeing the difference, they can move on. Because in passion, one may not see, because it sounds good, it's nice, but you have things to do. You know, like I remember one situation came up where there was a traveling Sankirtan party, and very good. They were very, very efficient, very well managed and all that. But unfortunately, all the people on the party, you know, they're used to eating rice every day. And if they don't at least once a day eat rice, they feel they haven't eaten. And the head of the party, he somehow or another was taking it that when they eat too much rice, then they get lazy, they don't do as much. So all he had was chapatis, you know, or even pasta like this for them. So at some point it got too much because it's been weeks now, you know, that they haven't eaten any rice. So then when their guru shows up and all that, and oh, how's it? Because they're getting really good scores. They're getting everything. Everything's going really well. At least you could see spiritually, devotionally, but they weren't satisfied with the rice. So then, you know, there's a whole big discussion and Guru Maharaj has to sit there and all this, and this one says this and that and all things. So then they finally work it out, you know, what's the problem there. And so then having worked everything out, now everything's solved, everything's good. Now we can go back, you know, to looking at things from a proper devotional attitude. Then Guru Maharaj asked then, okay, so is there any other questions? You know, in other words, we finished everything is that. And then somebody in the back raises their hand and says, oh, yes, then what's your question? Will there be rice for lunch today? So that's the whole point. When you're dealing on this point of, you know, passion or ignorance, then even though you're dealing with these higher things, yeah, okay, it's great. We've worked it all out. But is it going to come out the way I want? Yeah, it's going to come. Okay, great, nice. You know, but what time? Is it going to be today? You know, just they can't get away from it. That's why the Vedas recommend the mode of goodness. It's easier to let go, but it doesn't have anything to do with that causes bhakti. That's an illusion. You know, that's the illusion because someone will make, yeah, that's the point. So therefore that's, we'll take it. Oh no, but you know, these intellectuals at the university or scholars, they should be able to, they'll understand everything we're talking about. But the point is no, you only understand if you want to, if you're interested in bhakti. Otherwise, you can have a room full of common people and intellectuals and, you know, people from all backgrounds, but who is interested, they'll understand. It has nothing to do with the background. It's just, it's a nicer situation. It's a more favorable, but it doesn't mean that it's going to actually give the effect because it doesn't produce bhakti. It's not that from bhakti you get that. That's why it says bhakti is independent from karma, means it's independent from the three modes, including goodness, including nishkam karma yoga. It's independent from that. Nishkam karma yoga is a nice situation that from there, you know, it's easier to be engaged in bhakti, but it doesn't produce bhakti. Bhakti is independent. You having that desire to serve the Lord, therefore then bhakti manifest. It's independent. It's what do you call that? What was that word? Swayam prakasha. Like that. That's the whole point. You know, so Bharat Maharaj as a deer wants to offer prayers, but how do you offer prayers? He can't talk. But then bhakti manifests that. So, you know, he can, all these things are being manifest. This is the mood of what he was thinking. Right? Same with Gajendra. Okay. In order to further affirm the transcendental nature of bhakti, the next adhikarana elucidates on the transcendental potencies of bhakti. Okay. Adhikarana 3, transcendental potencies of bhakti. Adhikarana Prakashika. The previous section concluded by emphasizing the transcendental happiness derived from practicing bhakti. The current segment further elaborates on this theme, extolling the divine potencies of bhakti and the magnificent outcomes it brings. The Adhikarana begins by asserting that bhakti engenders a deep connection, rati, with the Supreme Lord, and stands as the exclusive means to please him. It delves into the rationale behind the Lord's desire to be pleased by his devotees, attributing this to his intrinsic energy, haladini, which radiates joy to both the Lord and all beings. This energy, primarily manifesting through bhakti, becomes the source of the Lord's profound satisfaction. Right? So we're getting in, you know, how things work, why it works, and all that. Because we're doing everything for happiness. Right? And so therefore we use the mechanics and all that for. But our idea is if we do that, we will be happy. Because if it's about Krishna's pleasure and we apply the mechanics in the situation to serve Krishna, then happiness is derived. But that's because Krishna's pleased. When he's pleased, we're pleased because he's the Lord of Haladini. But making the mistake turning from Krishna, then when we apply the mechanics and the situation, we think it'll make us happy. But we can't be happy unless Krishna's happy. Therefore, that's why in the material platform, there is no happiness. Continuing, the author underscores the Lord's responsive nature to the sincere prayers of devoted worshipers, affirming that the devotee's profound attraction results from the Lord's abundant mercy. This establishes the Lord's complete control and position as the ultimate refuge, with the individual soul serving as an abhasa or assistant in his divine relationship, in this divine relationship. Right? So there's always going to be that point, how we are, because, you know, us being as an energy, we're working in that context of, as sat, you know, expanding from, I mean, from chit, is that the action itself, the qualification and the action, you know, based on in bhakti, then that's going to be our position. So we're an assistant, you know, here he uses the term abhasa. So that's always going to be there. We never become the devotee. We're always assistant to the devotee. And one can say, no, but I want to be the devotee. It says, no, you don't. You think you do because you think it's a better position. You'll get more. So that's actually a contamination of karma. You know, distinction, adoration, and profit. So this is what actually you are. This is why it works. You know. That's how it functions. So that's the point, is we're always on that. We have that. We're in that middle position. So in being in the fire of bhakti, then all these potencies are there. But our part in it is as an assistant to this divine relationship. Right? Subsequently, the author establishes bhakti as the exclusive means for realizing and attaining the Lord, highlighting its power to bring the Supreme Lord under control. This control is attributed to sadhya bhakti, prema, which eradicates all impurities, and sadhana, the practice leading to prema. The narrative then shifts to how dharma, in the form of direct bhakti, eradicates sins, emphasizing that bhakti must align with the principle of sarva vidhi nishedhasyu, signifying constant remembrance and unwavering devotion to the Lord, right? So it means always remember, Krishna never forgets. So that point of always remembering, that's the thing that makes it work there. As soon as it's not aligned, then you see all these mixes come in. The subsequent anuchetas highlight the greatness of occasional engagement in direct devotional service. Even a singular act of bhakti, such as hearing, chanting, or worshiping the Lord, results in complete purifications from sins and liberation. The Adhikarana concludes by describing the potency of bhakti avasa, representing the shadow or reflection of pure devotion. Right? So bhakti is so powerful that even its abhasa, can elevate you out of the modes, because the point, you know, here is that singular act can free, purify from sins and liberation. That's the point. Now we're trying to get to prema, so we're not satisfied just to have been, you know, destroyed all sins and been freed from the contamination of material nature. Because why do we get that? Because any action, the material platform can't give you that. Nothing. So it's only by bhakti that can come up. And so what is the nature of bhakti? It is to please the Supreme Lord. So thus only in that context, then we're happy with that, you know. So always remembering Krishna is more important than never forget. They go together, because if you're always remembering, you're not forgetting. But since we're forgetting, then we have to give up forgetting and always remember. Right? When we notice we forget, oh, I have to remember. Like that. Okay. Then we have. Okay. The Adhikarna summary. So then the point, the Vishaya, through continual devotion over an extended period, one cultivates a profound affection for the Supreme Lord. And it is solely this devoted practice that brings pleasure to the Lord, right? So cultivating that profound affection for the Lord. So you're doing devotional service. It's transcendental. So the point is it gives a taste. So that taste, there'll be the existential element of the taste, you know, that you're situated in a more tasteful position. But more than that is the taste of performing the actions and applying yourself. But actually, the real taste is coming because it's being done to please Krishna, and Krishna being pleased, that's why we get the taste. Right? So just gradually as you go, you start to raise that element of taste that you see. It's Krishna himself who is the source of the taste. And bhakti is the potencies of bhakti is through which we can appreciate this. We can taste this, right? So bhakti is one of Krishna's potencies, right? So that is what pleases the Lord. It means we're doing something, but we're doing it to please the Lord. That's what pleases him. What we're doing isn't what's important. That we're trying to please him is what's important. Now, as we mentioned in the previous discussion, now with that, if you emphasize that more, then someone could say, oh, so it doesn't matter what we do or how we do it. Technically, in one sense, no. But at the same time, is what's your knowledge and faith and motive for just doing anything at any time without any particular direction? Right? Because then if that's coming from just you feel like it, then that's not the main thing. It's about, you know, what would please Krishna. You're trying to do that the best you can according to your ability and the situation you're in. One person can do it very well. Some person can do it, you know, not as well. You know, just like if we're building a bridge, you know, to Lanka, then, you know, bringing tops of mountains is going to be very effective. And just kicking little bits of dust and sand into the water from the, you know, from the ocean, from the beach, it's going to take a long time, you know, not very effective, you know. So you could say is yes. So, you know, therefore the monkeys bringing the mountaintops, our natural conclusion could be that bringing these mountaintops is more devotional than the spider and the squirrel kicking sand or dust, right? So, you know, and probably here, sand means the squirrel and dust means the spider, right? You know, because you're going to have big grains of sand and very small ones like that. So, but Ramachandra points out, no, they're both equal to me, because it brings pleasure to him is that they're trying this, they're continually engaged in devotion, you know, with trying to please the Lord, that profound affection. That's what pleases the Lord. Now, one is doing it in a very grand way, one is doing it in a very small way, but the point is that they're each doing to their best. So therefore, the spider can't do more than dust. The squirrel can't do more than sand, right? He's doing his maximum. So the monkey doing his maximum is bringing a mountaintop. If it's like, oh, okay, that's the case, and the monkey's got down and started pushing the sand, that wouldn't be very good. So that's the whole point, is that's why we work by what's going on. We have to understand the situational that are there is controlled by Krishna. And so therefore, we in that situation try to do our best for Krishna. So it's not that, oh, so it doesn't matter. It's just bhav. That's what the sahajiyas say. And then they just go into doing whatever they feel like. So it just becomes a mode of ignorance. They don't do what's recommended. They go against the thing, and it's what they feel. So therefore, even if you were saying there is some bhakti in a sahajiya, it's bhakti in the mode of ignorance. You know, it's not being done on a, you know, a higher platform. Okay. So now, okay, we made this point. Now here comes the doubt, the shamshaya, and then their, you know, reasoning or their argument. Why does bhakti give happiness to the Lord who already has eternal unsurpassed bliss? Oh, it's amazing, huh? It would contradict his eternity and unsurpassed nature. Means he's saying he's already eternal and all, you know, and all bliss. He is the form of that. So how could bhakti give him bliss? Because then that would mean that he doesn't have all the bliss, right? You know, so these are questions that come up where you have, you know, at least in theory, a good brain, but you don't have enough to do. And so you waste your time with these things. That's why mental speculation is not recommended. In other words, once you start mental speculating, it means you don't have enough to do. Right? Uttara. According to scriptures, the Lord is described as eternal and possessing unparalleled bliss. Additionally, it is mentioned that devotion, bhakti, brings pleasure to the Lord. From this, it can be inferred that the Lord, who is composed of supreme bliss, possesses his intrinsic potency known as Ladini, which emanates bliss both for himself and others, much like light illuminating itself and its surroundings. Right? It means that you will light a lamp. The light from the lamp lights itself and of the surroundings. Because of the illumination of the lamp, you can see the fire, see the lamp, and it also then illuminates the room. Right? Its primary function, right, this Ladini, is to facilitate devotion, bhakti. Right? So here's that we're seeing is that the point of bhakti means that you're applying this devotion, right? Like that. The Lord grants his potency to his associates, and it emanates, it remains eternally with them, right? So this bhakti is with them. And with that, then they engage in bhakti, and they, by that association, they can engage others in bhakti. So that's what you're looking for, right? Through association with this potency, the Lord experiences profound satisfaction. Therefore, devotion infused with his Ladini potency pleases the Lord, who embodies pure joy, priti. Right? So that priti, that pure, that love that's there, so that aspect that we're talking about, you know, the we'll generally refer to as prema, because that's you could say that's the first stage where you get where then you've attained to the eternal relationship with the Lord. And then, you know, can develop. So the whole thing is priti. And so that aspect of theirs, bhakti, is the action. It's the dynamics. It's the element, you can say, of Govinda, right? Just Krishna's pleasure, that'll be Gopinath. That attraction to the Lord that you want to perform, therefore, as a anubhava devotion or action, bhakti, then that's Madan Mohan. So you see is that all these things are there. So there's the position of the things, you know, the Lord and the devotees and his potencies. Then there's the action performed by, you know, the devotees in interaction with the Lord. Then there's the happiness the Lord feels, and that is shared with the devotees. devotees, right? Does that make sense? So in this way, there's a distinction between bhakti and prema, but at the same time as having attained prema doesn't mean bhakti doesn't go away. It means more bhakti is performed and more. It's just that now, not before the happiness attained when you're performing bhakti and you haven't come to the point of perfection, then is going to be on the platform of, you know, bhava or its extensions down, you know, through the other seven aspects of elevation from shraddha to prema. But once you come to that point, the bhakti, the experience that will gain from that happiness is going to be prema. And then you perform more bhakti and experience the prema. So it's always going on. The bhakti means is that devotion that you have attraction to the Lord and you want to do things to please the Lord. So that devotional service. Okay. Purva Paksha, right? So now, again, they have a doubt. Or, you know, furtherance of their doubt. Are you inferring that the Supreme Lord is trying to seek happiness from something beyond himself? Right? Because then you're saying he's not the complete, oh, he is everything like this. So then, you know, you're saying that he's not complete in himself, right? So these are all, we can see is that these are all, when you're talking about the Lord, the atheistic nature always comes up with these things because they judge them according to themselves. And they're looking at, I myself, looking for happiness beyond myself, I'm not happy. Therefore, I go for these, you know, atmajnan, and then, you know, understanding, you know, so that starts the path. Then I bring it to the point where I am Brahman and I'm non-different from the, you know, the Supreme Brahman. And therefore, I merge into that Supreme Brahman. And therefore, I experience that Brahmananda. And so then, you know, you're self-satisfied. You are that Brahman. So therefore, the happiness of Brahman is coming from yourself. So you're self-satisfied. Because in other words, if you find you can't depend upon others, then you just depend upon yourself. Right? That's the material thing you do. You try to do it yourself, get others to do it. They don't do it. You do it yourself. Right? There's a saying, if you want something done right, do it yourself. Right? You know, so that's the point. So they're just projecting this principle, either from karma or jnan, onto the Lord. And so they're going to say all these things. And that's how they think they've logically dealt. But the point is since the Lord is beyond everything, that's why he can create, maintain, and destroy everything, and he's still existing. Is that he be beyond, and where does it come from? It has to be, since everything is him, it has to be his potencies that are being worked here. And so they're unable to appreciate that there's something that is achintya, or is you know, is undefinable, undescribable. But it doesn't mean that you can't discuss. It just means that even what you're discussing, that's unlimited. So you can't discuss all the unlimited things. You can discuss portions that you can relate to. So therefore then, you know, that's going on. But you see here again, that mundane approach, then they don't understand the position of the Lord. Therefore these things come up. And so here they're saying it in a bit of a huff. Oh, so you're saying it's beyond the Lord. You're saying he's God and he's everything. But now you're saying he's looking for something beyond. Isn't this contradictory? You know, that kind of, you know, ha, I got you. You know. Uttara. How are we doing with time? Okay. Although the Lord is inherently content and self-sufficient, even a humble offering can bring him to light. No material offering, regardless of its value, is required by him, as everything emanates from his own energy. However, due to his universal benevolence, he graciously accepts all offerings made in pure devotion, not out of necessity, but as an expression of his love for all beings. Then from Bhagavatam, the citizens arrive before the Lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient one, who, by his own potency, incessantly supplies others, right? He's giving all the things that they have. He's self-satisfied, and he's giving others, and then they're giving it to him. These presentations were like the lamp offered during worship of the sun. Yet the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as wards welcome their guardian and father, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11, 4-5. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's this dynamic thing that is beyond anything mundane, because they want to leave out the Lord. They want to use the logic of no Lord to make everything work, and it doesn't. So then they say, well, it's nothing, and that works. No, it's that you want to do things. This, all you have to do is add the Lord into it. Then all the things that you want to do and your nature and how you feel that things should function starts to make sense and work, because now the nature of the soul works because now you've connected the Lord. Right? Now it works. Otherwise, not working. Okay. So, end here. Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.